following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 27 for February 23rd, 2010. I've got a bacon ache. And we finally get to this recording. Hello, everyone.
Hello, hello.
We have got a good number of stories for you, several on Facebook. I'll forewarn you in advance. So let's hurry up and move it right along.
You're really struggling not to say gamut. I could tell.
Yeah, it's sometimes difficult.
But anyway, we will start out with our typical security news. Adobe Acrobat and Flash recently had updates, so everyone needs to go update immediately to protect themselves against any malware or bad doings out on the internet. Apparently, these are some pretty critical things. I believe the Flash was last week, and the Adobe Reader is actually this week. So that's a fairly new one. Even if you don't use Acrobat Reader that much, you probably want to update it.
Probably.
Anyway.
Because sometimes, if you don't have an alternate setting in your web browser and you click on a PDF, it will open up in Adobe Acrobat Reader.
Definitely something to take care of.
Mm-hmm.
And we will leave that with heading over into the Google space, where Google last week was actually allowed to begin making and selling their own electrical power.
This is so bizarre.
Well, I guess it's a method for them to support their own infrastructure and be able to support their server farms and things like that. I believe at the Google headquarters, they already have like their own power plant.
So what they're doing is they have their own power plant. I think they have solar power, don't they? And they
It's green power of some sort.
They are allowed to sell the excess power.
Yeah, and they're thinking that as they expand their server farm, they will actually be able to power communities for a fee.
Oh, okay.
Residential and commercial.
Right.
Still not a whole lot of details on that. That kind of fits in with them trying to be a global domination company by being a gigabit ISP that
yes,
we mentioned last week.
Exactly. Following right in Microsoft's footsteps here, it seems.
Yeah, and speaking of Microsoft, they announced finally, for Pete's sake, the existence of Microsoft Windows 7 series for cell phones.
Yeah, Microsoft Windows Mobile 7.
Well, Microsoft Windows Phone 7 series or something in that regard.
Okay.
It appears like it's going to be a lot like the Zune software that everybody has on their MP3 players. It's going to be a touchscreen interface with various pages that you can scroll to with your fingers. Looks like it's going to be a good competitor to the iPhone or the Android platform.
Oh, okay.
So it's a total revamp. They didn't keep anything from the prior versions of Windows Mobile.
So they're just going to abandon Windows Mobile? They're not going to develop it any further?
Actually, they're going to hang on to Windows Mobile and call it Windows Classic.
Oh, okay.
I guess they're going to have to hang on to it because a lot of phones do not have touch interface.
Right.
So in order to use a keyboard and everything like that, that are probably going to still develop that. But in other Microsoft news, the Microsoft Yahoo deal for search has finally been approved.
Took them 2 years.
United States and the EU, surprisingly, both approved this deal that will allow Microsoft to supply Yahoo with search results. The look and feel, I guess, will continue to be Yahoo. But when you actually do searches, you'll end up getting Bing results instead. And it's not really clear as to whether it's going to be a Bing look or whether it's going to keep the current Yahoo appearance.
So what is Yahoo now? I mean, they have mail groups. But they don't no longer have a search engine. So what are they besides, you know, an email service with groups and things?
Well, they have other applications like Flickr that does the photo support.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe they have some other things like the Yahoo Groups and Yahoo Messenger, stuff like that.
Hmm.
But this is just a way for them to get out of doing search and to sort of merge with Microsoft in order to sort of compete better with the Google.
I see. In other business news, Nuance Corporation has purchased a company called MacSpeech, which we featured in last week's podcast when we talked about the Scribe program for the Macintosh. This company, MacSpeech, specialized in dictation software for the Macintosh. Nuance, which operates and has developed the Dragon Naturally Speaking software for Windows, has bought this company so that it can expand its Dragon program to include Macintoshes, because a lot of people who used Macs wanted something of that caliber. So this is a way for Nuance to expand its market share and go into the Mac marketplace, if you will, and further develop their products.
And this is probably different than the voiceover stuff that cell phones use?
Yeah. Well, the Dragon software is for dictation and for voice recognition, and that's what the Scribe software does that was developed by MacSpeech. The voiceover is a screen reader that reads the screen to people.
Okay.
So that's the difference there. And that is still an Apple product through and through.
Yeah, well, hopefully by merging MacSpeech and Naturally Speaking, it'll actually improve the dictation software out there.
Maybe. I know it'll improve the Mac software, most probably.
I mean, granted, they still aren't tremendously great. You still have to speak extremely slow and clear at times in order to get it to pick up. But
right.
Apparently the technology is there, but computers just aren't powerful enough to handle the program algorithm that it takes to mm-hmm. make good decisions on it,
mm-hmm.
like making decisions between the word night and knight.
Yes.
But we will slowly go into social
networking.
Exactly.
Beginning with a rather whimsical website called pleaserobme.com.
Yes, a Dutch company has come up with this website to sort of prove to people that social networking is not the greatest thing in the world when it comes to sharing your location and other details like where you are. It sort of proves the fact that as people tweet using the Foursquare application, that is sort of a check-in, check-out type of thing where mm-hmm. you go to a restaurant or something, you check into it to say, hey, I'm in here visiting. I believe you can even become a mayor or something of various restaurants if you...
I have seen that on Twitter.
So choose. But the software is... The website is very simple. It's designed to show that thieves could very easily create this website and track where people are mm-hmm. so that they can create targets for crimes. So if you're saying that you're out at the grocery store every Friday or something, though, they could possibly plan to commit a crime or something at your location
mm-hmm.
as you're gone. It's not supposed to be a malicious software. It's just sort of people should be aware.
Right. It was just designed to prove a point, I suppose.
Yeah, and the guy that created it, his comment was to the effect of, just a few years ago, people were sort of nervous about putting their actual name and information mm-hmm. on the internet, and now they're actually putting their location as to where they are every second of the day.
Right.
And there could be some risk in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something definitely to keep track of, and I know a lot of different media outlets have been covering it recently.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of putting your status and things about you on the internet out for everyone to see, Microsoft Outlook is entering into the social networking arena with a new version of Outlook, which will allow users to check into their Facebook and LinkedIn and other social networking profiles further on down the line and see what friends, colleagues, and coworkers are posting to their profile. to keep up with the people's changing status. At this point, it hasn't been launched yet, but LinkedIn has already developed a
plugin, I guess,
for it, for the interface. I think the Facebook one is going to be developed soon. And once this is launched, people who use Outlook 2003, 2007, and even the new 2010, when it is released, will be able to see additions to their profile from their friends. However, they won't be able to post anything themselves. They'll only be able to kind of track what other people are doing.
But as people start using the Microsoft Social Connector, they'll most likely allow you to post things. Facebook is even allowing you to reply to status updates and things by email.
So yeah, I mean, if this takes off, I'm sure Microsoft will develop it so that you can post things to these various sites through Outlook.
And a lot of people have been saying, well, it's just another Google Buzz, but apparently Microsoft announced to a lot of the media back in September that this was coming as a new feature to the Microsoft Office suite of software.
Yeah, and that they had been working on it for a long time, I think. They'd been working on it for over a year, I think. So yeah. I don't think this is a development by them in response to Google Buzz. I think this is just something that just simultaneously has been being developed and that they're rolling out at this time.
Yeah, so hopefully not a conflict with Google Buzz, which is just a pain in the butt. But anyway.
Yeah. Anyway, moving along, we've got several Facebook things to go through. The first one is just a small note to let everyone know that Facebook has made some changes in the privacy settings as regards third-party applications like quizzes or greeting cards and other sorts of things. Initially, it used to be in the privacy settings that it just had a setting that told Facebook how you wanted third-party applications dealt with, the things that happened as a result, like for quizzes, where do you want the results to go in general, or for greeting cards, what do you want to have happen? And with this new setting, you will be allowed to tell Facebook what you want to do on a case-by-case basis. Like, let's say, in one instance, you want to send a certain greeting card to one specific friend, but in another instance, you want to send the same greeting card to a select group of friends. You can do that by setting a certain privacy setting. Likewise, if you want certain quizzes to be posted to your profile but not others, you can have Facebook ask you each time if you want those posted. I'm not exactly sure how it works because I haven't tested it, but apparently it's designed to make these applications a little more privacy sensitive.
Yeah, and it might actually limit how much crap you get on your wall.
Yeah, it might. It
from people sending a birthday cake to someone and every friend gets that on their
right page. And I think that's what it's designed to do.
Plus, it might limit some of the Farmville and Mafia Wars input that you get.
God, that Mafia Wars. Oh.
Complete waste of
time. I mean, you have a whole account set up just to deal with Mafia Wars. That's how big of a waste of time it is.
Well, I have too many friends and folks that deal with that crud. Sending you little things here and there and posting their level upgrades and stuff.
Yeah, and this just shows how cluttered your Facebook profile can get. Speaking of clutter, Facebook is trying to reduce the amount of clutter on its mobile site by coming out with a Facebook Zero.
Is this going to be less calorie, I guess?
Maybe. Oh, gosh. If only. if only chocolate had zero calories. What this is designed to do is to give users of mobile devices access to Facebook in areas where bandwidth is extremely limited. Facebook is going to be offering this site, this service to mobile carriers free of charge. But if you want to actually post photos and things to it, you are going to have to pay for a plan. This is text-based. You can only do text-like things, like post to your profile and read your status updates. You can't share photos or engage in chat or use any third-party applications. It is zero, Z-E-R-O, .facebook.com. And apparently the interface is just very stripped down. Like I said, it's all text. There's not a whole lot you can do, but you can use it in places where bandwidth is extremely limited. I don't think it's been rolled out yet. Or if it has, not all mobile carriers have picked it up yet.
Yeah, and if I tried to go to it yesterday and it basically told me that your mobile carrier does not support this site. Well, yeah, I was on a computer. I'm thinking that it's only going to be offered to people on their cell phones.
Yeah.
And if you go with a browser on your cell phone, you'll actually be able to get to the zero.facebook.com.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And probably going to be a little bit lighter than light Facebook.
Probably a lot lighter than light, yeah.
But I kind of wonder if it might be a sort of a response to the upcoming iPad in terms of bandwidth usage, because I believe the AT&T plan for the iPad, there is actually a 250 megabyte version that you can get for $15 a month.
Right.
So that would be very limited in how much you could actually do.
Mm-hmm.
So you probably wouldn't want to be uploading files and pictures.
Yeah.
Using that particular data plan.
Probably not. Yet more Facebook news.
Talking a little bit about suspensions.
Yes, two suspension stories in reverse of each other, practically mirror images. A student, I forget what state it was in, but a student created...
I believe it's Florida.
I think so, yeah. A student in Florida, high school student, created a fan page on her Facebook profile dedicated to how much she hated her English teacher. And she invited, you know, people who hated this teacher to subscribe to the fan page or do whatever. This was a couple of years ago. And she was suspended from school for this. She sued the school district, or her parents sued on her behalf, and won, basically. So what the judge decided was that the result, I mean, it was the results that matter in this case. Essentially that her posting on this Facebook fan page amounted to her opinion, and it was not on school property, and it did not cause anything disruptive to happen on campus, and it wasn't, you know, vulgar or really causing any kind of a disruption. So, in a sense, the school lacked grounds to suspend her. Of course, that's all kind of moot now because it was done 2 years ago, but that was the ruling that the judge made concerning this type of internet speech. There really isn't a lot for courts to go on in this area. The only really sort of thing that's a little similar happened 30 years ago and was a Supreme Court ruling concerning students wearing armbands on a school campus to protest the Vietnam War. And this really isn't the same. It's about off-campus speech and how it affects on-campus activity. So until the Supreme Court weighs in, the, you know, precedent's going to be a little murky until they lay down something new.
But in the reverse, just a few miles from here in Apex, North Carolina, there's a teacher that's suspended for doing basically the same thing, right?
Somewhat. She went in to her Facebook profile and complained essentially that she had a student who played a prank on her. And she was teaching evolution, and the student apparently had some Christian fundamentalist beliefs and left a Christmas card on her desk that said, "Merry Christmas from Jesus," or something. I don't know what. And she was very upset about it, thought it was hate crime, at least in her opinion, and told the student she wanted to meet with him on Monday to discuss this. I think on the Facebook page she called him like Bible Boy or something to meet with him and discuss it. Well, she was suspended from school, from teaching at this high school for a while. And the test for this was somewhat similar that the school district used. Wondering if she was, you know, are you commenting on something that's, you know, of public importance? And if so, are your comments going to be disruptive? And I think the key difference here in this case is that she was commenting on something, I guess you could call the evolution debate, something that's very tense and sensitive topic, especially in the school system. And in the other situation, it was simply someone's feelings about one certain person. I don't really know the difference, but this is, you know, the way in which these school districts chose to react. And I guess that sort of underscores what I just said a minute ago, that it's kind of a shame that the Supreme Court hasn't had to deal with a situation like this, so that we have clearer precedents to go on.
Well, maybe the difference between the two cases is the fact that a teacher commented about a student, which in turn could be found out by other students, which would make that teacher sort of not as trusted and respected by students.
Perhaps.
And a student making a comment or a Facebook page maybe wasn't seen as being affecting the classroom
Perhaps.
Environment.
I think the issue of evolution actually plays into this. And it was seen as touching on a very sensitive public topic.
Yeah, and most likely these kind of situations are going to continue to come up just because the courts haven't dealt with it. And the ideas that they work off of are old school.
Right.
And a lot of the people that are making the decisions are a lot older than the young generation, you know, in their 30s or 20s that interact with this stuff on a daily basis. So it's going to be interesting to see where things go as some of these people that are going through college right now, get their law degrees, end up becoming judges and being able to sort of shape law responses to issues like this in the near future.
Because I think that may be part of it, but the bigger part is as internet speech gets more and more constant, and it begins to have more and more of an impact on the non-internet life, you know, how to deal with that. And that's going to be something that, you know, the courts are going to have to struggle with.
Yeah, I don't know that we can really classify something as a non-internet life because it's everywhere.
Well, that's the thing, how, you know, the lines are blurring. So that's going to be something that's going to have to be dealt with as these lines get blurrier and blurrier.
But the court system did make a decision in an article that we had spoken about earlier.
Yes. We talked earlier about the disabled guy who wanted access to a website that Sony maintains in conjunction with one of its games, some Quest game or something. And the plaintiff wanted Sony to make its site more accessible, and the judge in this case ruled that Sony was not obligated to do so. The plaintiff brought the suit under the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the Court of Appeals judge essentially ruled that playing such a game did not tie in sufficiently to a place of public accommodation, which is basically what the ADA governs. And so the claim was overruled.
Yeah, I guess it was. I guess he was wanting access to a site where you could actually sell your wares and things that you had achieved in the actual game. I believe World of Warcraft does a lot of selling of materials, you know, weaponry and ammunition and things like that for actual physical money, kind of like the Facebook Zynga stuff, like Farmville, you know, but you're not actually selling it to someone else. So I guess the courts just decided that it wasn't public enough.
Well, that's part of it. I think one of the things that may have been a factor in this decision was that it's a website that can only be accessed, I guess, by the people who are playing this game. So it's a very, I guess, small percentage of people. And the ADA really only covers buildings and places that can be accessed kind of on foot. It does not cover the internet. That's not what it's meant to be used for.
Yeah, and it's probably something else, kind of like what we were just talking about with the other rules, you know, as far as the Facebook tirades and things. It may be something that has to be adjusted because the ADA was only developed in, what, the early 90s?
Late 80s.
Late 80s? So,
and
I mean,
it was
internet
only,
wasn't even a thought in Al Gore's mind.
And it was, Al Gore. And it was only meant to deal with, like I said, places in the real world, concrete buildings, sidewalks, streets, etc., and not places out in the ether somewhere. In other words, the interwebs. And it only applies to the United States. And the internet is a very international, non-cohesive piece of fluff. So, you know, the ADA is really not the appropriate way to handle this. The best way would be to get together with Sony and tell them the problem and suggest ways in which it can be fixed. But apparently he was having trouble doing that, and I guess that's how it landed up in court in the first place.
Yeah, well, and to a lot of times in these days and things, we try to sue first, then ask questions later.
Right, you know, type of thing. That's true. So,
it could have been that way. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of articles on this. It just sort of fizzled a little bit.
Right.
But in another instance of legal woes, a school in
Pennsylvania.
Lower Marion County, Pennsylvania, has been accused of spying on students.
Oh, not just a school, a school district.
Well, yeah, I was trying to be less sensational about it.
But, sensation is everything.
Yes, I know. Should be going for the bang. Mm-hmm. But anyway, this school in the Lower Marion District of Lower Marion County of Pennsylvania issues Apple laptops to all of their students, which come with microphones and webcams. Mm-hmm. They have a piece of software that they've installed on the system so that they can actually track it in case of theft. Now, Apple computers come, you can have Back to My Mac on there, where you can actually log into your computer remotely and be able to see who's using your computer and actually activate the webcam. There's a lot of different software packages that will do the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. This school district installed that in case of theft on these laptops. And apparently there was one student in particular that I don't know whether he was considered to be like a troubled child or something, but a vice principal at the school used this, or allegedly used this software in order to view his activities at home. He was called into the office one day and told that he was acting badly, and the assistant principal gave a picture showing him at home in front of his computer. I guess the latest results have been that he was eating candy of some sort, which sort of resembled drug paraphernalia, I guess.
Yeah, and he was suspended, and the parents are suing the school district, and other parents in this situation, the others with the Mac laptops, are going to be added to the class if they want to participate. The school district says that only two people in the whole district were allowed or knew how to use this software, and that it was only supposed to be used if the computer was lost or stolen. They never indicated, A, how the vice principal got a hold of the knowledge that this guy was doing something, quote-unquote, inappropriate, and B, what they were doing viewing the computer. You know, they never said it was stolen. We thought it was stolen, so we're looking for it, or anything like that. They're going to have a hard time covering their, well, themselves in this situation. I don't think they don't have a prayer.
Yeah, apparently they have activated the cameras for approximately 42 to 45 times over the school year. Mm-hmm. No information as far as why they activated it. If they've got that big of an issue keeping up with laptops, then why are they giving it to students?
Right.
You know, different outlets have been covering it. I believe it was CNET, one of their reporters on Buzz Out Loud had said, well, it's could be construed as a case of like child porn, you know, where an adult has accessed a laptop in a student's bedroom or home, and I think that's a lot of what parents are getting in an uproar over.
Oh, it's just the invasion of privacy. There is a very strong feeling that schools have a set boundary about, you know, when they can interact with, when they can, you know, criticize and deal with behaviors of their students, and that is inside school walls and on school campuses. Once the students are off school walls and school campuses, their behavior is no longer the school's business. And the school is trying to claim that, yes, indeed, their behavior at home is the school's business. Now, the school could say, well, we have the laptop, and thus the webcam and the laptop, since it's ours, makes your behavior our business. But that's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah, and I saw one report where a parent was saying, well, this laptop, when it comes home, it's on all the time. It's sitting on the breakfast table. It's sitting in the living room. It's sitting in the student's bedroom.
You know?
So there's a lot of concern that there could be pictures of their kids in various stages of undress and things like that out there. So I have a feeling this particular vice principal, I think is what they called it, will most likely be looking for work.
Someplace else.
But the weird thing is that the district really hasn't released a whole lot of information.
No, they haven't.
The media is going with what parents and students are saying. And a lot of students, I believe, are covering up those webcams with post-it notes and tape and things.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully disabling the microphone because that's a totally separate portion. But
right.
Should be interesting. And the UK has already said that, yes, their computers that they give out to students have microphones and cameras, but the only time that they would ever be used would be if the laptop was stolen.
Well, that is what the district is claiming. However, they have been used, and they haven't come up with a satisfactory explanation of why they were activated.
Very true. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling we'll hear more and more.
I hope so.
What were you thinking?
Well, apparently, love stinks. At least in
Minnesota. I feel the same
Minnesota.
Way about you.
Thank you. In Minnesota. Because on Valentine's Day last week, some guy, farmer, plowed a half-mile-wide manure heart in his field to tell his wife he loved her on Valentine's Day. And I think this sounds absolutely appalling. What was he thinking? But his wife really kind of thought it was sweet and the most original Valentine's Day gift she'd ever received.
Well, you have to give him an A+ for originality.
Yeah, that's true.
Granted, he could have painted something on the side of a barn or something like that, but instead the manure hatch.
Well, they'll have a very nicely fertilized field come next year.
Yes, something will be extremely green or very tall, depending on what is planted there.
Depending.
I just don't know how you come up with that idea, but
I don't know.
P-U.
Precisely. In a recent study by Maple Leaf Foods in Canada, 43% of Canadians surveyed said that they would choose bacon over sex.
I can understand that. Bacon is meat candy.
Yes. I can just hear you one night saying, oh, not tonight, dear. I have a bacon ache.
Hey, if women can use it, so can men.
There was no indication as to whether people preferred Canadian bacon or traditional bacon. But there were some other results on this survey. 23% of men surveyed ranked bacon as their most favorite fragrance. 4 out of 5 respondents who said they loved bacon also said they were good lovers. And nearly 1 in 4 respondents, this would be me, is concerned that their spouse loves bacon more than them.
Hey, I believe I can almost say a lot of men out there listening to this are going to say, but my wife listens to the Victor Reader stream.
Mm.
About the same thing.
Doesn't have quite the same weight. I don't know. I mean, bacon's a food. The Victor Reader stream is an appliance that does have some cool features.
If the VRS could work the DVR, I would have no purpose in being here other than running the mixer.
Oh, well, maybe that's true. Maybe that's true. Gotta admit. You might have a point.
But hey, maybe we need to get the bacon alarm clock.
Ooh.
Although then I would want bacon like every morning and that might be a little bit much.
Wait a minute. Don't you usually eat bacon in the morning for breakfast?
Well, yeah, but it would influence me to have it even more often.
Oh, okay.
If
you say so. Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap this up.
Yes, as we've tried to pull in some different sound effects this time to prove we can do that.
Exactly. If you want to know more about the stories that we considered for this episode, you can go to our delicious links, delicious.com/techaccess/27. You can follow us on Twitter at @TA_weekly. And you can send comments to us via Twitter, website, voicemail, or email. Take your pick.
Yes, it should be interesting. Maybe people want to figure out how they can make their own stinky Valentine for next year.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps. I think that about does it, unless you have anything more to add.
I believe that pretty much wraps it up on our 27th episode as we get over the hump, as people call it, for podcast, because I believe one guy called it the mark of 25. Once you get a little bit past 25, maybe you'll actually stick around for a while.
Yep, I've heard that too. So here's hoping we stick around. At least we hope that.
For at least 28.
Yeah, exactly. Well, folks, I hope everyone has a good week. See you next time.
Bacon.
Yes. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com. Or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.